This talk was given by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugen Roshi is the abbot of the monastery and the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or to find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
The Buddha taught, I quarrel not with the world. It is the world that quarrels with me. I am not in conflict with the world, although the world may be in conflict with me. I want to say a few words as we prepare to enter into the new year about the Buddha Dharma as a path of peace and all that peace is. We think of peace as an absence of conflict, which it is, but it's much more than that. The essential way of speaking of the Buddha Dharma is that it's ceasing from harm and practicing good. Words that are very easy to say, not so easy to do. Even though our basic nature is good and moves towards goodness. But that doesn't mean that our nature is inherent. Goodness is not inherent within us because nothing is. If it were, then we would only be good. But that our basic nature is good means that we are always fundamentally seeking good. That our impulse, our basic impulse, our basic force is towards what is good. Because it's not inherent, we practice it. We cultivate it, we bring it forth, at the same time that we cultivate non-harming, that we diminish those forces, those energies. And we become adept at recognizing the difference between what is harmful and what is beneficial. And we practice that every day in every form of practice that we engage. That's what we're doing. And that all of that is the expression of and leading towards our liberation. And as we move forward, we move forward towards a full or fuller integration, a unity. And we do that by continually going back and touching, drinking from that spring of what is good. We go back again and drink from that spring of wisdom, of selfless compassion. And so that takes its expression through our commitment, the commitments that we make to the path itself, but more specifically, or as a way of making that more clear, and therefore able to practice, is that it's a commitment to be free from all of those things that would bind us: greed, anger, delusion, hatred, pride, jealousy, envy, indifference. At the same time that we're committing to generosity and compassion and loving kindness, selflessness, patience, sympathetic joy, courage, perseverance. Shantideva said, although I yearn so deeply to be free of suffering, I go back again and again to the causes of my suffering. And that too is part of our nature. It's not inherent, but it's something that has been well established within most of us. And so going back again and again, continuously practicing, is the path. And it's easier to do that when we're inclined in that direction, when we're inclined towards generosity, towards patience, towards compassion, when our heart is open, when our mind is calm, when the circumstances are conducive, when we're in the midst of the Sangha, when we're being supported to do that. And yet even then, the inclinations towards not peace arise. And it's easier to do that when we're with others who are doing the same thing. So the Buddha spoke of having noble friends, friends who are of a similar inclination, have a similar aspiration. And that's why the Sangha is a jewel. But how is it when we are not so inclined? When we are not in a state of generosity, not in a state of open-heartedness? And how is it even more so when we're with others who are not so inclined? Who put on display their greed, their anger, their animosity, their prejudice, their indifference. They're not interested in wisdom and compassion. It seems as though there are some, it seems as though there are times where within us we are not so inclined towards good. And so how do we live a path of peace? How do we not be in conflict with the world when the world is in conflict with us? How do we cultivate peace when others are cultivating war? Whether that other is ourself or another. I was reading an article this week by Nicholas Kristof, who every year, I think, writes about good things that are happening, just so we know. There's some of that. And he said that since modern humans emerged about 200,000 years ago, this was probably the year in which children were the least likely to die, adults were the least likely to be illiterate, people were the least likely to suffer excruciating disfiguring diseases. Every single day, he said, over 300,000 people got access to electricity, 200,000 got access to clean water. He said, historically, half of all human beings died in childhood. Now it's about 4%. That the percentage of people who are experiencing extreme poverty has plunged to 10% of the world's population. And so he's trying to say, because it seems as though there is so much that is distressing, and there is, that there are also good things that are happening. There is good in the world. And at the same time, we do face old, dangerous cycles that have come up again and again and again, and they come up again today. Nationalism, tribalism, authoritarianism, demagoguery, xenophobia, the expressions of all kinds of fears. And we face unprecedented new crises. Our precious earth. And so how do we walk a path of peace? Khyentse Rinpoche said, samsara is suffering. When we understand that, when we really understand that, then we are determined to be free of it. And to actually do so, we need help. Such simple words, such a simple statement of truth from a deeply enlightened being. We need solitude. but we should not let it become isolation. We need friendships and support, but let them be free of unreal expectations and loose cannon projections. Canon is at one with the Buddha, at one with the Dharma, and one with the Sangha. Canon Bodhisattva is related to all Buddhas in cause and effect. What does that mean? Kinsei says that Avalokiteshvara is a fully enlightened Buddha who, in order to serve, takes on the life of a bodhisattva. All Buddhas have one nature, the same nature, and that nature is embodied as Avalokiteshvara, as Canon Bodhisattva, as compassion. He says, as the embodiment of the compassion of all Buddhas, Avalokiteshvara is at the same time the source of all Buddhas. Canon Bodhisattva is the Buddha, is the Dharma, is the Sangha. It's ourselves. He says, Canon is like 100 streams passing under a single bridge, uniting in one stream. Above all, Canon is you and me. That's the heart of it. That's the point of it. And as Kinsei said, we need help. We need help to have faith in that. We need help to examine, study, see that that's true. And we need help from Buddhists, from ordinary beings, from animate and inanimate beings, from historical beings, from non-historical beings. Basically, we need help from every direction. We need help from those who are living, those who are no longer alive, those who haven't been born yet. And that needing help is also our nature. That's why solitude must not become isolation. Kinsei said that Canon Bodhisattva manifests infinite forms, queens and kings, spiritual teachers, ordinary beings, wild animals, mountains, trees, bridges. He says, whatever is necessary to fulfill sentient beings' needs, whatever is necessary to meet the needs of those in need. He said, even a cool breeze in scorching weather, a soothing moment of relief during a painful illness or manifestations of Canon's compassion. So we think of compassion as always originating from consciousness. And what he's saying is compassion arises from all things. All dharmas are forms of emptiness. They appear as compassion. How can that be? Because we think of compassion as actively working to alleviate suffering. Exactly. All dharmas are forms of emptiness arising in non-harming. Like mountains, trees, and bridges, wild animals, grasses, rocks, sky, water. Arises in non-harming. Compassion is the absence of suffering, the absence of cruelty and self-centeredness and hatred. But it's also the manifestation of good, which everything is when it's in accord with its nature and the nature of its world. And we seem to be pretty much the only objects that appear in the world who have to work that out. Because Canon is free of any fixed nature, any identity, any form, she can manifest infinitely. And so then the question we have to ask ourselves is, what are the forms that we need to manifest to meet the needs of those in need? Every form of practice, when we talk about merging with the breath, merging with a koan, forgetting the self, dropping off body and mind, all of that is the manifestation of all dharmas or forms of emptiness, having no fixed form. And to free ourselves of all fixedness so that we can take infinite forms, so that we can appear as is needed. And so we take refuge in our basic nature, which is emptiness, manifesting as compassion, appearing as the Buddha, appearing as the Dharma, appearing as the Sangha. And at every step along the way, we need help. We need help from within. And so much of practice is learning how to find that which we need from within. And we also need help from without. That's why on this solitary path, in which we are so fundamentally, existentially alone, we are bound together. And then so when we encounter all those who would appear as demons, those who build walls, who destroy peace, who abuse the earth, who oppress people, we can realize that they too are at one with the Buddha, related to all Buddhas in cause and effect, though they may not be aware of it. They are not yet joyful, pure, eternal beings. Not in their consciousness. As we, in so many moments, are not that in our consciousness. And so when we meet the demons within, that's training, not just to liberate ourselves, but to meet the demons wherever we find them. The demons being those who would build walls, who would destroy peace, who would desecrate what is sacred. And examining how we have come to this moment, the causes, the conditions, the actions, the views, the attachments. It's training so that when we encounter the same things in the so-called outside world, they're familiar. That when we stop being in conflict with ourselves, we can at the same time begin to stop being in conflict with the world, as the world is in conflict. And isn't that exactly what we've been training in this week? Isn't that what the talks have been about, is how when you are in conflict with yourself, to not be in conflict with yourself. I do not quarrel with the world, although the world quarrels with me. And so, morning mine is Kanzeon, evening mine is Kanzeon, all throughout the day. And we find our inspiration from the great peacemakers of our world, past, present, those who are sitting in this hall. We should find our inspiration everywhere because we need help. We should find our encouragement everywhere because we need that encouragement. As we enter the new year, we'll make vows. The great force of our mind, of our hearts, to make vow, to devote ourselves after careful consideration, thoughtful reflection, on those things that are most important, on those things that we need to align ourselves with, to be a peacemaker, so that our contribution to the world is no longer chaos and confusion, and so needing help arrives in the form of vows. It's how we help ourselves, and it's also how we help each other. Our vows are a force in the world. And this has nothing to do with, you know, pride or arrogance. It's just a fact. Vow is a force in the world. Why? Because it's intentional. Because it is a result of careful consideration. And a vow is, by its nature, good. You don't make a vow to create chaos. You may have the intention, but that's not a vow. Vows belong to the realm of what is good. And they're a force in the world because the life of a vow is that you are putting your whole being into it. That there is an inner shift, an inner conversion, Dogen says, an inner alignment. And that's what makes it so powerful, and it's also what makes us accountable to it. Because it's a serious thing to make a vow. Because our inclination is good, when we align with that and we commit to it, and then we don't live in accord with that, it's a greater misstep. And so there's a greater imperative to follow through, to actually live it. And that's why it's a great force in the world. And it's also because it's an act of courage. It's a courageous thing to do. Because you're sticking your neck out. You're saying, I am going to do this. And that's why we take vows publicly. So everybody bears witness. Right, which makes us more accountable and makes it more powerful. But it, in that way, it becomes an example of a way of living a life. And it can embolden, it can encourage other people to do the same thing, to be so thoughtful, so concerned, so loving, because vows are based in love. They're based in loving life or wanting to love life. They're based in loving others or wanting to love others. And so we bind ourselves to that aspiration so that it becomes our life, and so that in the moments when we forget, we're still bound to it. Remember years ago at the prison, we were doing a Zazen Kai, and one of the students who had done Jikai found out that somebody, another inmate, had kind of made a threat against him. And so he told me he needed to step out of the Zazen Kai to go take care of it. I said, what does that mean? And he, looking me straight in the eyes, He took off his rock suit. He says, sometimes you just got to take it off and do what you got to do. And I said, you can't take that off. I said, taking off that piece of cloth is not taking off your vows. That's what you did. You made them unremovable. That's what a vow is. He resolved it peacefully. With, I should add, some help. He left to take care of it the way he intended to do. And one of his brothers came in and said, where did he go? I said, he went to take care of it. He said, you let him go? And I said, what am I supposed to do? Chain him to the desk? And so he left and helped him because he needed help. And so as we enter into this new year, this new beginning, this new period of practice, this new period of life, to reflect on our vows, what do we need to really be bringing our attention to? What do we need to bring ourselves into alignment with? What are the things that we need to keep right here? May all beings know happiness and the cause of happiness. May we wish that for every living and inanimate thing, that it dwell and abide in happiness and know how that happiness comes forth, which means it's deep, which means it's approaching ultimate happiness. Because every living thing wants that. Every non-living thing already has it. Even though sometimes the distance between that desire and one's actions grow very, very wide, the fundamental desire is there. And so the Buddha said, let that wish, that vow for yourself and others, fill your whole being. May all beings be free of suffering and know the source of their suffering so that we can alleviate it. If we don't know its source, it just continues. That we should know by now. And delusion is thinking that hateful words, greedy actions will bring us closer to that happiness. But it doesn't. It never has. Believe that it'll take away the pain, but it doesn't. It only increases. And so it takes great courage to face that pain. Because it's not just pain, it's not just emotion, but it's the whole structure, it's the whole house. Gandhi said, a person without courage, a coward, is incapable of exhibiting love. Love is the prerogative of the courageous. Why is that so? Why does he say that? Why does love belong to the realm of those who have courage? Should reflect on that. May all beings delight in the virtue of others. Everyone has goodness. Everyone has qualities. Yes, admittedly, sometimes it's hard to see. And when we can't see it in somebody else, then they very likely can't see it in themselves. When we see good qualities in others, they still may not be able to see those, just as we often cannot see those in ourselves. But it's part of our nature. And so to delight in that, to be so generous, so magnanimous, that other people's happiness makes us happy. Other people's well-being, other people's good fortune, other people's accomplishments. And may all beings abide in equanimity, free from all of the afflictions, so that we're no longer at the mercy of our old habits and patterns. We've reclaimed our lives, reclaimed our natural mind. We can stand on our own two feet. And in doing that, we realize everybody can do that. Everybody's born with the power to do that. It doesn't mean everybody's doing it, just like we're not always doing it. But to know that that's our nature is compassion itself. This very moment arises from mind. This very moment is not separate from mind. And mind and compassion are not two. The Buddha said, "Let us live happily, hating none, though others have hatred. Let us live without hatred among those who hate." That is a very challenging thing to do. We should not kid ourselves. That's why you see that calling in virtually every great religion. And it's why we see it so seldom in the world. It is the great challenge to be happy and without hatred in the midst of hatred. As I read before, Kensei Rinpoche said, the fulfillment of your mind, of your basic nature, allows you to have your own obstacles, all of them become peaceful. They return to their natural state, which is a state of peace. That the teachings become verified in your body and mind. You see them to be true. Your wisdom is actualized. It spills out. And you realize that you yourself are sublime. You realize that you yourself are sublime. If we understood that, would we treat ourselves in our mind the way we so often do? If we knew that of others, would we treat others the way we do? Would we treat anything? And so in a sense, all of our harmful actions arise in moments when we are distant from that truth. Sublime, profound, subtle, wondrous, ordinary, miraculous. And maybe all of that's just another way of saying, for each of us to make our lives a force, to make this day, this new year, a living vow. I think there's no greater offering than that, no greater gift to ourselves in the world than to live in vow. Because in order to do that, that requires all that is good to come forth. And to live that vow means to do that, and to do that, and to do that. I want to say that for those of you who are in Sesshin, it was such a pleasure and a gift to do Sesshin together. Those of you who are new to practice and put your whole heart into it, and those of you who have been practicing for many, many years and put your whole heart into it, it is so uplifting to be in the company of those who care and are willing to literally put your butts on the line. and to return, and to exhibit that courage, which most of the time, you know, we don't see it. We don't see the courage. There's a reason why the Bodhisattva is spoken of as a hero. because they're continually engaged in heroic acts. They just don't know it. That's okay. They don't need to know. Knowing it doesn't make them a hero. Knowing you're courageous doesn't make you courageous. Being courageous. And the great courage of the Bodhisattva is in the innumerable actions and moments and turnings and shifts and releases and renewals that are the stuff of this Dharma path, this path of peace. So let us go into this year remembering we need help. And that's a good thing. That binds us together. So, shall we?
Thanks for listening. You can find more Dharma Talks, interviews, and events at zmm.org/media. While online, please check out the Jizo Project, our multifaceted initiative to make Zen Mountain Monastery more accessible and welcoming to all. Learn about the new Jizo House building and accessibility enhancements to existing facilities that are just two aspects to this exciting endeavor. Find out more and see how you can get involved at zmm.org/JizoProject. That's JIZOPROJECT.